So welcome to this first biomechanics Q&A. And I've got a little bit of a plan to run through. And as I've said, we may get people kind of dropping in as it's going along. I know what it can be like with technology. I've been learning very fast, as I'm sure some of you have. I hope you're all fit, well, and healthy and safe, and that your family members are too, so that you are able to be proactive in this time, which we could see as a bit of an opportunity. And that's really what I want to talk through as a bit of a theme as we go through this. So I'm working very closely with SIMSPA, who are the Chartered Institute for the Management of Sport and Physical Activity. And they are now our industry sort of governance group. And they are now working with reps as a collective and other bodies to raise the standards in our industry. And I believe that from the experience of reps and merging in with SIMSPA, they have now got a really strong concept of how to work out what the industry needs and then provide it with the help of all their partners and providers. So I'm an education provider, obviously. Understanding things like the very fast changing industry, particularly in the last couple of weeks, and what you need. So you being, in my world, exercise professionals. I do also train therapists, but predominantly sports massage therapists, Pilates teachers, yoga teachers. And I do often get clinicians through on my training as well, osteopaths and physios who want to understand exercise a little bit better. So it's fantastic when we do get these kind of different demographics all together, which, looking at the people coming in, I think we've got here. I know that we've got a mix, predominantly exercise professionals by the look of it, and some of you may have manual therapy skills. So as I go through this Q&A, I am talking to predominantly exercise professionals in my responses, but with an understanding that we may have some therapists watch this later or even with us now. I know there's kind of people are kind of multifaceted hybrids these days. So on speaking with SIMSPA, one of the challenges I think we've been faced with as providers and supporters of the personal training world is how can we help and how can we help you quickly? So we've been also working with Ben Coomber, who is an expert in the field of nutrition. He trains professionals in understanding fueling the body, and he did a poll on his Facebook group asking what you want. And so I'm going to go through a couple of those later on. There's kind of a common theme in there. And 51% said they wanted CPD because we have, I think my workload's trebled, I think. But I think whilst we have time to some degree, it's a fantastic opportunity to educate. Hence doing this Q&A right now, just to kind of, from my expertise, which is in human movement, come from that angle, but give you an opportunity to talk to myself. I can feed back to SIMSPA and we can start providing you with more tools and equipment and things going back to when we get back to normal, even though now is our new normal. So my background is sort of 30 years in the exercise world. I have got manual therapy skills, but predominantly my interest is in human movement. And making it simple. So I class myself as a strength coach and a biomechanics coach predominantly, but also as a non-academic. And I think there is an issue within our industry of professionals having a fear of what they don't know. And there's kind of a double-edged sword to that. One of the things is movement is super simple, but anatomy makes it complex. I'm going to try and help you understand what I mean by that as I go through. But also, are you helping clients? And that's really fundamentally the big question. Can you help clients? And of course you can. That's why you are doing what you're doing. So as long as you're insured and covered and providing a duty of care, then don't beat yourself up too much. If I had a pound for every person who came on my courses saying they need a deeper level of understanding of the anatomy, I would have retired by now. So what I'm going to teach you is a few tips and tricks that I learned along the way, coming from the same kind of feeling of an anxiety of not knowing enough. I had a mentor who, he was a chartered physio. He's still one of my best friends now. And I've managed to I've known him for over 16 years, both professionally and personally, and we worked very closely together for some 10 years, very closely, to the point where we were together more than we were with our own families, developing the education programs that I now deliver to the exercise world. As a chartered physio, obviously, I wanted to know what he knew, and I would make his ears bleed with questions around things I wanted to understand better about the body and human movement. And he used to drive me nuts because he would never give me the answer. He would always follow up my question with a question. And it drove me insane. I just wanted the answer straight away. But over time, becoming an educator more and more myself, I started to recognize the actual quality of a great tutor, teacher, trainer, educator is not giving the answers, but giving or empowering other people with the ability to work things out. You then have far more tools that are productive for you when working with your clients under any circumstance, whether it's face-to-face or online like we are doing at the moment. So the tactics he taught me are what I'm going to hopefully help you understand. So while I have got sort of 7 or 8 questions to run through, I'm going to challenge the questions, forgive me, Karen, and do that deliberately to show you I don't have all the answers. I am a non-academic. I'm a bit of a nerd when it comes to human movement, so I've studied it. But I'm quite a slow learner in terms of my learning style. I need to use kinesthetic ways to interpret what I learn in writing and in 2D. And so I want to try and help you understand how I've learned. See if that helps you out. Because people ask me questions, I think, why are they asking me? I have no idea. So I'm going to teach you some tactics. So I've just got a little bit of a schedule here just to try and keep on track. And I just wanted to give people more of an opportunity to drop in. So as I've said, if you want to ask a question at any point, just go down to the chat box, put a question in. I'll get to them at some point. If I don't have time in this session, then I am planning to do this every Wednesday for the whole of April to just understand what you guys need and want and try and make that accessible to you through SIMSPA. They've got a big CPD platform already and they're working closely with myself and other providers to get you as much free or low-cost information as possible while we have the opportunity to learn. So I'm not going to ask your forgiveness when I don't answer these questions, maybe in the way you expect, because hopefully what I'm going to teach you is how to ask a really great question. If you know how to ask a really great question, you often come up with the answer anyway. So we're going to go through these after I've just gone through. I just want to go through a little bit of the basics of human movement on from the biomechanics education ethos, just to help feed into what I'm going to respond to in some of these questions, particularly something like the one that Dan was asking me. Daniel, you asking me, I think it was yesterday, which interplays a lot of complex factors into the dominant question, because the body is such an integrated system. So what is biomechanics? Biomechanics is fundamentally the body's mechanics. It's just human movement. So if you're an exercise professional, you're teaching people how to move, you are already qualified in biomechanics at the kind of simple end of the spectrum, if you like. So when you're watching a client moving and they're doing a squat and the knee's dropping in on one side maybe, and you're looking, you think that doesn't look quite right, you might verbally coach them to push the knee out and you would demonstrate that in maybe in front of them, whether you're on Zoom or face-to-face, depending on how that's working for you. So my question to you would be, do we know if that's technique or if that's an intrinsic biomechanical factor? So extrinsic is what you see on the outside, which is over the top of my skelly here, we have skin and tattoos and clothing and hair that disguises what's actually going on underneath. So you already know how to coach technique. Okay, so when the coaching doesn't work, the question is why not? And so what I specialize in helping exercise professionals understand is the intrinsic biomechanics. And there are 3 basic subsystems. So the myofascial, the muscles and the fascia, the skeletal and the neural systems. And they all interact with each other to produce what we see on the outside. So we all understand that muscles can adapt and become tight or fibrotic or problematic due to sedentary posture. The muscles can then inhibit the nervous system. If a nerve passes underneath a muscle that's gone into an adapted state, then the nerve can feel tethered and make something feel tight. And the joints can start to stiffen up. And any variations on those, a joint can become stiff because you're sitting at a desk, so the muscles start to adapt, and so on. So they all interreact. And this can help us understand how we work things out using a systemized approach to assessing and correcting your intrinsic biomechanics. So I want to try and give you an example of one common problem, just before I start going into the questions, just in very simple terms that can occur that I'm sure you're all familiar with, if you've ever heard of a muscle called piriformis. So I'm gonna use my friend, excuse me. So in your hips, you'll have a whole series of muscles, the glutes, the piriformis, and a load of bunch of others. So I'm just using piriformis because it's one we commonly understand. When we sit on a lacrosse ball or try and stretch and move, it's that kind of area that feels uncomfortable or stiff. So when you walk, you get a kind of a rotation from one side to the other as the pelvis moves. And that little muscle crosses that moving joint. So if it becomes adapted because you're sitting, the body's really good at adapting and compensating. If you sit too much, it will try and reserve energy by making that muscle less elastic or less mobile. That can affect the movement around this joint. So what can happen is where your legs through the gait cycle effectively lengthen and shorten, because the leg steps forwards, this side of the pelvis rotates up and back as it steps back, forwards and down. What happens is you're getting this lengthening and shortening. Now, if the muscles of the hip start to adapt, it can affect that movement. And so what can happen is you could get one side of the hip is stuck, rotated forwards and down, and you get a kind of a medial drop of the knee that's very subtle, but then might result in knee pain if they're going out doing their daily exercise, walking or running, and they complain of knee pain. But the knee isn't the problem, the knee is the problem. It's not the root cause. They could get a tibial discomfort or pain. They could get foot pain. And this might be helping you out a little bit, Daniel, with your question. But the foot, the shin and the knee have nothing to do with the root cause in terms of causative factors. There's no problem there. The tissue's okay. It's just your body saying something's going wrong upstairs. But how do we know that? And that is what we're faced with as the challenge. Let me just give you another example as well. You may, instead of the knee dropping in on the long leg, the ilium might sit higher on one side and it may create a kind of a functional scoliosis, if you like. That can cause back pain. And again, it has nothing to do with the back. It's the fact that the little muscles over here are starting to adapt to a sitting posture. This can then affect the shoulder on the opposite side. You're linked through the fascial chain, which is why we walk with rotation. And so you can have a shoulder issue that comes from the same problem over the opposite side. So foot pain, shin pain, knee pain, shoulder problems can all come from something that doesn't actually hurt. This is where what we talk about in the Biomechanics Education Academy is how we understand all of this, put it all together and deliver exercises like the Army 3D program to improve that movement simply and safely and effectively within our remit. The little muscle we talked about, piriformis, has a close relationship with the sciatic nerve, which comes to one of the questions I'm going to be going through later on. And so you can have neural type tension or issues in other parts of the body that again are predominantly just coming from a dysfunction in the hip. So an important factor that I'm going to try and highlight as I go through some of these is we must stay within our remit. And so I'm actually going into a meeting at 1 o'clock with a physio and an osteopath to try and put together a systemized, literally a structured process for us to work together that is a more a simple system of approach to hopefully then feedback, work with SIMSPA in helping you guys develop the same sort of process. Because if we can work together, we've got to be in a better place in terms of confidence in who we can and can't work with and finding solutions to some of the questions we're going to go through. So I hope that all made sense. I've just gone through that very quickly. We go into that in more detail when we're on our in our academies. And I've got a little bit of stuff online to try and help you out, as I've said. You can find all that on the website later on. So let me just have a little look. So I'm going, I've managed to get another monitor, so I feel like I'm slightly techy here. I'm not sure how that's going to go, but we'll keep going. So mistake number one, if you like, in terms of questioning is asking the what or identifying the what rather than the why. So each of the questions I've got, it would be difficult for me to answer without understanding why the individual has asked that question. Because the reason why you're asking it may change the response. And I'll highlight that as we go through it. So the question really is, well, so what? Why are you asking me? So if you do that in terms of your own questions, that might start you off on a slightly different route to finding a solution rather than simply asking me or somebody else online. Mistake number two, knowing more doesn't make you smarter. So what I mean by that is, in terms of having loads of knowledge and intelligence, if you're trying to fundamentally help people to move better, you don't need necessarily to know more than everyone else. Because that's a common issue that people come to me with, is they feel like they don't know enough. Are you helping people? Do you understand exercise prescription? Don't beat yourself up. Obviously, knowing more gives you more tools, but you can have a really huge amount of intelligence but not or knowledge, but not really be great at the application. So in my experience, you guys are usually brilliant in application, and the fear of not knowing enough often gets in the way of you just recognizing you're doing a great job. So I hope that makes sense as well. So the solution is understand safe and appropriate application is probably smarter when you're a human movement practitioner, personal trainer, and so on. Mistake number three, asking for any physical solutions to a clinical issue online. Solution, don't, period. And predominantly that's because we don't know what we don't know. If you've ever Googled or internet searched a problem, it often looks pretty horrific, or you think, ah, that's fine. Where a clinician would understand certain tests that rule out more sinister things. So please don't ask clinical issues online. It would be inappropriate for any professional, I think, to give you a diagnosis online. They can guide you on the best steps and possibilities, but I think we've got to be mindful of that, of expecting that of people online. So just be aware. And a clinical issue in my world is a red flag. So in your training as an exercise professional, you be familiar with red and yellow flags. Red flag, don't go near them, send them away. That's clinical. Yellow flag is more from the psychology background, which I know that Plattingham's Training Institute, welcome. They are, you know, sort of looking at more and more and how that can inhibit people moving well. Oh, my cursor's going from screen to screen. Right, okay, so let's just have a quick look. Yeah, okay, so I'm going to start with the first question from Karen. She asked me about knee crepitus, and interestingly, I've had knee crepitus for a number of years, so I already had a little bit of knowledge about this, but she asked, what makes the grinding and cracking noises when flexing and extending the knee? So crepitus, if you haven't heard about it, is a grinding and popping of the knee. Now, there are several causes, and what I actually did after Karen asked me the question is I went back, and I did what I did when I first had it, and I used the internet. And we can use the internet as long as we're using decent resources. So a good one that I like to use is Physiopedia, PubMed, and they're usually clinical ones, I'm afraid. Sadly, the exercise world has yet to catch up with that level of information, sort of stuff we're talking about, and the crossover. So very often we do have to research from clinical resources, but they're usually going to be better than maybe Wikipedia or Barry down the road. So if you search for the causes of crepitus, it can be air bubbles or it can be damage. So predominantly the question is there pain? And if there's pain, remember the point I made earlier, that's a red flag, and then you need to see somebody to get a clearance to move and exercise. Because you can have osteoarthritis, you can have patellar tendon, you know, you can have irritations, meniscus tears, things like that, and that needs to be either ruled out or in beforehand. If you simply have a creaking and a cracking of the knees, now my understanding is you might actually be in better shape than somebody who doesn't, because it might mean there's a little bit of lubrication going on with that synovial fluid that's making the popping sound, which can be just simply air bubbles. So in response to Karen's question, it would be, why? Do you have pain? Do you know somebody who has pain? Have they seen a clinician? So you can see how it would encourage questions first. And then if there's no pain, if they're fit and well and they're healthy, then it could just be a popping and a cracking of the air bubbles and synovial fluid in the knee, which generally is going to come later on in life. So I'm in my 50s coming up now. And so I've run for many years. It doesn't bother me. They do creak and I just let it go. And there is a big psychological attachment to pain. So being mindful that I don't start to think, oh, I mustn't move on those creaky knees, is probably not a bad thing. So managing crepitus is, it talks about when exercising, people should always listen to the body. So this is the advice from a physio site. If there's pain, stop, and always exercise in moderation. And it says stretch before exercising. We may have some other solutions, but fundamentally, it's quite a simple solution if that was what we wanted to find out. So that comes back to why was Karen asking that question. So two things, is there pain? Signpost, if there's not, don't worry about it. It's not uncommon. So hopefully that helps a little bit, Karen. But if you go to physio-pedia.com, then they've got a really nice model for describing and understanding different concepts of what crepitus is, what it could be, what it might be, and how to then deal with that. But predominantly, movement is good unless it hurts. See a physio or a therapist. So I'm going to come down. You're very welcome, Karen. So I'm going to come down to Laura. So Laura asked a really interesting question for right now. How can someone maintain muscle mass in the absence of heavy gym weights? So I wouldn't be so patronizing to say, well, why, when we're faced with the limitation of not being able to access a gym. But I would go back with the question. I'll say, well, what do you think it is about heavy weights that allows you to grow muscle? And then the response is, well, a heavy load on the body. Can you apply then a heavy load to the body without heavy weight? Clearly the response is going to be, well, you may be more challenged, but if you have a little bit of imagination, body weight can be quite a considerable amount, and it's going to depend again on the individual. So obviously a bodybuilder who's squatting hundreds of kilos is going to be more challenged than somebody like myself who doesn't squat very heavy, maybe 50 kilos. I might be able to replicate that in some way with large water bottles, which is what we've got in the garden. Just great big 30 litre plastic water bottles that we fill and empty of water to create different weights, which is a very simple method. Clearly, you're not going to be able to replicate some positions and moves in terms of gym equipment and cables and pulleys unless you get things like a TRX. But it isn't easy. So to be fair to Laura and say it's not easy, what we do have is body weight, the requirement for a bit of imagination, have a look around the garden, sacks of potatoes and things like that. And I think the acceptance that we may actually just enjoy this period, give the joints a break, work on your movement capacity first, so that when we get back to the gym, what is likely to happen, if you're really smart about it, is you could then get another ramp up of your muscle mass based on where we've come from and gone into going back to the gym. So I hope that makes sense. I'm not sure if Laura's in actually, but that's in response to Laura's question. Just going to check. I've had a little question come in or something. Okay. It is, mate. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no problem at all. So yes, I hope to record this. So if anybody wants to watch it back later, or if you've got kids running around, that's fine. So Troy asked, I love this this question. What is the best exercise to strengthen TFL? So TFL, my understanding is, and I would have asked him this question as well if he was here, what is that? So tensor fascial artery is what I assume. I know Troy is very switched on, kettlebell coach, mindset coach and nutrition coach. But my question would be, well, why? Why do you want to strengthen TFL specifically? Why are you asking that question? So I'm going to just have to interpret some of his responses just to give you examples. And it may be that he's experiencing a problem, or he has a client who experiences a problem in that area, or he feels like he has a weakness that he knows TFL is responsible for contributing to in terms of movement. Now, as I said, I know that Troy's quite switched on, so I'm going to assume he's more along the latter lines of questioning in terms of he knows his anatomy and to understand why he might want to know how to strengthen TFL. If I did want to strengthen TFL, then I would go to looking at its function in application of movement. So TFL, it works, it's one of those muscles that isn't pure sagittal or frontal plane. It's kind of around the corner on the side. So I'm going to use my friend here. And it comes off the back of the front edge, but the back edge of the ilium, if that makes sense. So you've got the whole ilium here, so around the front, but it attaches at the back and then comes down and feeds into your IT band. So if we look at function and anatomy and how they work, it is responsible for internal rotation. So if you imagine where it attaches, it's not very easy to see on my guy here. Where it comes down here and along the side, you can imagine how when it shortens, it's going to immediately rotate the femur. And it's a very weak abductor, so there's not a big line of pull this way. The fact it feeds down into the IT band, which is a stabilizer of the knee, it's a big band of fascia. I think we need to take the two structures combined, would be a response I would give to Troy, and understand where they are in the body and what they do in terms of when we move. So if it's going to contribute to medial rotation, a little bit of abduction, if you think about those moves, when we're moving around, it's going to be a big player when we're walking to lift and stabilize the knee. Or the leg. So it's contributing to stability, but dynamically through movement. So if I'm losing anyone, do give me a shout. But fundamentally, why would you want to strengthen TFL? Well, I'd want to understand, is there a problem? Is there pain? If there's pain, send them away, get the clinician's response. If the clinician says they're okay to move, come back and then delve deeper. So is it a weakness in the movements it's responsible for? And then if so, then you would do movements that strengthen the TFL specifically. If it is a medial rotator and an abductor, then I would want to try and use those movements under load to strengthen it. You would periodize that training through lightweight, through reps and sets, as you know, and then start to load it more. And what might be interesting is to then understand how to strengthen it specifically during a more gross movement like walking. So if you think about adding a band to the outside of the leg, so maybe, let's say, for example, a lunge. If we had a band tied over the other side, wrapped around the top of the knee, and then we were lunging forwards and backwards, that band would add extra load specifically into the abduction component. If we want to work the medial rotation component, we would want the band on the other side. So that's where it gets quite complex, which might be where Troy was coming from. And then we'd want to strengthen against medial rotation. But predominantly, it's acting as a stabilizer when your foot hits the floor. So that might be where you would want to challenge it. And hopefully that might take Troy towards more of an answer on that. So hopefully that helps, but definitely go look at the anatomy. And again, I just go and Google and check what all of the, because sometimes when you do research into anatomy, you get snippets that from different sites that give you a bit more information. So in another site, it talked about, let me just go back to it, where, here it is, TFL together with glute maximus. Oh no, not that one, hang on. Bear with me. So it's a medial rotator, but it aids lateral rotation of the leg in conjunction with the IT band. Interesting. And if you think about its anatomy with the IT band and the position of the IT band, which is what it comes down into, then you can understand that. So I usually like to get a band and a skeleton and try and look at how the two ends, the attachments pull, what they are going to do to the lever or the bone. And that usually helps me appreciate it. And then I put it back into the whole system, step back and think, well, how does that play when walking or running and so on? So I found that quite interesting. You could class it as an antagonist to itself in some respects. Okay, so the next question is from Jessica. So I like this because it wasn't actually a question, but it's a great point she was making. She asked, I'm dying to talk to other movement professionals about the multifidus individually and then collectively how it works with psoas. So if you're not familiar with multifidus, it's a tiny, they call it the Christmas tree muscle in bodybuilders. So it's a tiny little muscle that goes up the spine and kind of gets a little bit of movement, so maybe a bit of extension rotation, but it is not a big mechanical mover. Whereas the psoas at the front that insert into the L1 to 4 transverse processes and then down onto the femur is a big mechanical mover. My understanding is when people ask these kind of questions is they're trying to understand how does that interplay into movement. And again, let's break it down, build it back up into the kind of so what. Psoas is a big hip flexor and multifidus is a tiny segmental stabilizer. So they play different roles in terms of the system. So if you imagine my fingers are all of the muscles and you have the spine in the middle, and some of these muscles are multifidus and some are psoas. If we were to say, let's say the psoas muscle, the hip flexor group are dysfunctional because we sit a lot and they are not playing their full role into stabilization, then you will be less stable than when they are working. If we were to do the same and say, well, multifidus, you sit for long periods and they're long and they can get fatty deposits on an MRI scan if you sit for long periods, can be reduced with exercise, by the way, so don't panic. If we take those out of the equation, again, we are not as stable. But where multifidus is a tiny proprioceptive stabilizer that we don't really think a lot about, it just does its job. Psoas is a big kind of mechanical, it lifts that leg, the femur, which is the biggest bone in the body. So they have quite different roles in comparison, but together they would stabilize the pelvis and the spine. And we could argue that they're almost antagonistic to each other in terms of flexion extension of the spine or the front and the back of the body. So even though she didn't ask the question, I kind of analysed it and thought, well, I wonder what she meant. I would, if she was here, say, well, why? Why are you asking? But when we look at the anatomy of how things play in together, it can just sometimes be interesting to explore that. But again, I would want to understand why she was asking the question to be able to answer or have that conversation. So I like the fact she didn't actually ask a question, because it, to have a conversation would be exactly what I'm doing with you guys right now. So Lindsay asked a really good one. Well, to begin with, she said, foot mechanics relating to hip problems, question mark. And so I actually went back to Lindsay. I said, sorry, is there a question in there? So she said, foot mechanics relating to common hip problems, question. So there's no question. That is not structured as a question. So to be able to answer a question, I need to receive one. So she came back with awareness of control of foot affecting function stability of hip and how to strengthen condition the foot rather than going down the orthotic route. So it sounds like she doesn't really want to get orthotics. And then she asked, do you have any favorite foot strengthening drills to alleviate hip pain? Ah, now we're getting to the root cause of her question. Because initially she's telling me information, and eventually what she's telling me is she has hip pain. She really doesn't want to go down the orthotic route. Okay, so number one, what do? She has pain. You need to get checked out. You need to be cleared for exercise. And so that kind of side of it will play in. Okay, brilliant. Thanks, Charlie. So, and I am going to get there. Just let me sort of challenge the questioning technique. So first off, I would say, why are you asking? It sounds like she's got hip pain, and it sounds like she's assuming the hip pain is caused by her feet. So she is thinking that if she gets stronger feet, this will help her pelvis discomfort. So initially I have an issue with that, because I've not had any confirmation that any professional has diagnosed the foot causing the hip pain. I haven't had any clearance that the hip pain is actually related to the foot. I assume Lindsay knows quite a bit about her body and she's making that assumption, but I would want to rule some things out first. I think one of the most dangerous things is to simply assume then you go down a certain route and it doesn't work and you still have that problem. So as long as we're acting with a duty of care in mind, I think we can safely say, let's assume that Lindsay has said, I'm fine, I've been cleared, my pelvis is just uncomfortable, I know it's my feet, because when I wear shoes, I feel better. For example, let me just give you that as an example. But please understand, I would need to do a lot more questioning first. And it's basically being able to do a verbal consultation prior to a physical consultation, prior to then my normal system, which would be that, seeing somebody and then coaching them to move. So let's assume she's cleared, she's fine, there's no red flags, she's been given the okay to move, and then she's thinking that if she had some foot strengthening drills, that might help to stabilize and irritate the pelvis less. So I would want to test her feet, and I would want to understand by doing the tests that we teach on in our academy, is she likely to be more of a, have a propensity to pronate, or does she lack the ability to supinate, or is she a very stiff foot? So you've got two ends of the scale. Now, even simply identifying if you're a pronator or a supinator does not necessarily mean that that indicates why you are symptomatic. So I hope that makes sense. I'm just going to pause just to let that settle for a moment. And if you do have questions about the specific points I'm making, please feel free to question in the chat box. So Charlie, who's saying he wears orthotics, I think what we need to be mindful of is orthotics should, in most cases, be a temporary adjustment process. So what an orthotic does is it changes the ascending force through your system. So what we want to do prior to that as exercise professionals is change the force going descending. So we want to improve the pelvic function, improve how the spine moves, improve the shoulders, make everything nice and strong, and then whatever's left could be the feet. So when it comes to the feet, if you have loose feet like mine, I am a heavy pronator, I struggle to supinate, and without shoes on for a long period of time, I start to feel it in my back. It disturbs my up through the chain into my biomechanics, at the knee, pelvis and shoulders. So I am good in shoes. Doesn't mean I don't need to wear orthotics. And I have in the past had orthotics. Orthotics may reduce pain, but still not be the solution because they have simply changed the load. So what we need to do is work very closely with podiatrists and orthotic experts or foot specialists to understand when and how often and how long we might need to wear orthotics or foot supports or certain types of shoes. So I know we've got a podiatrist in here now, and we were speaking yesterday about this combined approach to understanding the whole system. So again, this integrated system, if you have a foot issue, it doesn't mean it's necessarily the foot. You could put orthotics in and the foot feels better. Lindsay's hip could feel better. It doesn't necessarily mean that's the long-term solution. So we want to work together with the foot specialists to kind of, I don't want to say play around with, but experiment with, if you like, exercises to improve descending loads, maybe orthotics to improve ascending loads, and that combination to get to a point of maintenance and improved strength and performance, which is, I know, what the podiatrist here, he does with his clinics. So I know this is a very long way around addressing that seemingly simple question, but it isn't a simple answer. There has to be why, and then some box ticking or a process to go through to understand how we address it. So what we teach on our training days is definitely not podiatry by any means. They are very skilled professionals in terms of understanding foot biomechanics, which, by the way, is really, really complicated. But for us as exercise professionals, if we can understand better how to see if somebody is a really loose foot or a very stiff foot or something along the lines of, I think we need to send you off to Sam or my colleague who's a podiatrist, and then work together to improve that whole system and chain. So I hope that kind of makes sense, Lindsay. My apologies if it sounds a bit round the houses, but that is how I'd respond to that kind of question. Now, the last two questions, I've grouped them together because I'm not going to answer them, and I'm going to explain why. Because Cassandra asked, best appropriate exercises for someone with sciatica and mild carpal tunnel. And then Charlie, who said, things I can do for my ulnar nerve. So that was his first response to me asking his question, which again isn't a question. So I asked him to elaborate on that, and he remembered that I'd posted some stuff about mobilizing or flossing the nerves, which I do. So what I just want to differentiate is sciatica and carpal tunnel are clinical issues. We as exercise professionals must not work with somebody who has been diagnosed by a clinician that they have sciatica or carpal tunnel unless you have a document that states from that clinician you can exercise them. Does that make sense? If somebody has gone on the internet, Googled leg pain and got sciatica and come to you and said, I've got sciatica, that is something different. But the fact that they've Googled leg pain is the problem. So we need to be mindful of diagnoses online. I just don't think it's appropriate at all because there could be really sinister stuff going on. That's quite rare, by the way. But we clinicians can rule that stuff out. And so what we need to do as exercise professionals is practice a duty of care to our customers. And sometimes I think we care a little bit too much and we think, well, I might be able to help. You really mustn't, for real true duty of care, and to stick, by the way, within your insurance bracket so you don't get sued, send them away, get the letter, and then A, your confidence goes up, and B, you know you're practicing within your remit. So first to Cassandra, and I did respond to it, and she accepted that I said, you need to go and see a clinician first, get the diagnosis, and then get cleared before you actually physically see somebody. With Charlie, he'd got an ulnar nerve. I think he'd had some surgery or something, minor surgery, to release his ulnar nerve. So his issue was also clinical. And the way I teach nerve mobilization is on the fit and healthy body to prevent these problems from happening in the first place, not to cure them. So there's a big difference. It sounds very subtle, but it is a big difference. Because if I, over the internet, start coaching somebody with carpal tunnel, how to mobilize the median nerve, and they get a really bad response to that, that is poor practice, and I'm unable to be with them and coach them and rectify it. So both the guys, I've spoke to both of those guys, and they recognize that. So you can ask, but I personally will not give you a response without saying you need to see a clinician. So I want you to understand that, so that when clients come to you and say, I have sciatica, you need to understand, do they have a diagnosis from a clinician, not from the internet? And have you got a letter cleared for them to come and exercise with you? And that's really, really important. Let me just have a little look. So Dan, yes, I have. I know him. He's a nice guy, by the way, Daniel. He is, and his concept is coming from the foot. Yes, so where you might hear people start at the feet, which I understand that concept completely. Coming from above, and interesting, you said it's not always the case. It can be a mix of both. So I think this is again where these individual questions about, I've got hip pain, I've got a shoulder problem, what can I do? Have you got an exercise for, I've got a back problem? This is far too ambiguous. If you feel uncomfortable, let me try and give you a simplistic way of looking at it. Number one, refer, if they're in pain, refer them. That's the simplest thing I can, advice I can give you. Probably more profoundly now that we're purely online. I think that is really important. Number two, if they've actually had an accident, then that's clearly a clinical issue. If they've fallen off the bike and broken a bone, it's not our remit. Where the grey area comes in is people who are sitting at home, working from home on their desks, doing Zoom interactives with us in this weird time online, and getting neck, shoulder, back kind of aches, just apparently from poor positioning and static posture. There's a good chance that that could be remedied with exercise. We just need to move cautiously through a professional consultation to provide duty of care, just tick off boxes, make sure there's nothing sinister going on in where we need to refer them out. And this is again what I'm going to be working on with this physio and osteo I'm going to talk to next, is how can we have a system to follow where, as exercise professionals, we have confidence in what we can and can't deal with. Because trust me, there are a lot of people out there, and there are going to be more over the coming weeks, that get more and more low-grade aches and niggles that exercise can help with. Particularly techniques like the IMU Freely program is a no-brainer right now. It's the safest exercise program on the planet. It comes from rehab, and yet it's super safe. It's super easy to do online. It's easier than any other form of exercise. So that is a no-brainer. And as I say, it comes from rehab, but we've just got to make sure we're still following protocol. So I know on Ben Coomber's questioning that Danny from Simsper sent me through, common things that were coming up was how to do a parkour online, and it's the same. You just need a signed document. You do that through email, or if you've got the technology, do it that way. But your consultation should be the same. You're just doing it online. In terms of visual assessments that you might do, you do them visually. So I'm still teaching the visual assessments that we teach on our program. We can't do the manual ones, obviously, but the visible ones or the visual ones, just like watching somebody in the quality of their squat or their bend, roll down, things like that are still benchmarks that we could use. Just having a quick flick through some of the common things. So keeping clients' mental health is a key factor. So if they're experiencing discomfort and we can keep them motivated and moving with simple low-grade exercises, then that's going to help with the mental health side of things. So I think there's a whole plethora of things playing in. We just need to be careful not to care so much that we start skipping our consultation process. It is more important now than ever that we are checking our insurance. So check your, ring your insurance company up. I rang my insurance, I emailed actually, so I had a hard copy. Emailed my insurance company. I said, look, am I covered online in the same way I am face-to-face? And they said, yes. As long as you've got a certificate, you are insured. And I have that in a document that I can now put in my file. So if the worst case scenario happens, I'm covered on my insurance. So these are things we may or may not have thought about already. So definitely check into those. Just having a little look at my notes just to check I'm hitting everything. And then I'm going to come back over because somebody's made a point in here. So just bear with me. Some good points about, I think, good overcoming this class. Yeah, so Sam, who's a podiatrist, who is a great contact, by the way, feel free to stick your a link to your website, Sam, for everybody. I think a good way to look at orthosis is like glasses. Glasses help you see better, but in most cases, they don't fix your eyes. Yes, orthosis may be seen in a similar way. However, with exercise prescription, assuming the foot functions properly, think structural hallux limits. So you could have structural issues as well. It can be possible to wean off foot orthosis, which is what I did. A big problem can be, though, that people find the benefit from orthosis, so then lose motivation to follow the exercises. Yes, exactly that. So Sam is a very modern thinking podiatrist. I would definitely check out his website. Sorry, remind me please, Sam, your website name so the other guys can check you out. Because as exercise professionals, we need to forge relationships with professionals like Sam so that we are working with our clients safely. Sorry, thank you. Yeah, www.superfoot.com, SUPAfoot.com. So he's based in both Birmingham and Cheltenham. But you can certainly tap into him and his clinic and his colleagues for information and advice on clients. And I think clients trust us enough that if we want to eventually, when we get back to face-to-face, send them along to somebody, it's worth a trip for that, particularly with his train of thinking. It's very modern and what I agree with in terms of how the integrated system works. So we've got about 10 minutes left. I just want to, as I come to a close, let me just see who I've still got in so I know who I'm talking to. Brilliant. Well, hi guys. Hi, Rachel, Justina, Sam, Troy, Vicky, Victoria, Justina, Jane, Izzy, Hazel, Gemma, Danny, Daniel, Charlie. Okay, cool. So what I want to do off the back of this is encourage you to understand why you're asking the question you're asking first, to then play into whether you could actually find answers yourself. And then I have no problem, by the way, with you asking me questions. But what I want you to understand is why I may not respond with just a, oh, do this. It is about, if I understand the root cause of your question, like the reasoning behind it, you often talk yourself into the answer, which is what I used to do when I was with Martin, and I would ask him a question. He'd say, well, what do you think? Or why are you asking? And then I would end up inevitably coming up with the answer myself. Or I'd ask him the question and then I'd go, hang on a minute. And then I'd go, oh, no, it's all right. I'm happy with my, you know, what I was thinking already. I think it's quite instinctive for us to want a very quick answer to certain questions. Whereas in teaching and education, true empowerment comes when you think of your question And then break it down to, rather than the what, so what is the question? Well, I have hip pain. Okay, what do I do about it? Think, well, why? Why am I asking that? Why might I have hip pain? What could be contributing to that? How can I find a solution? How does my foot relate to my pelvis? And so on. You start to research, like knee crepitus. I went and had another look. I'd researched it when I had it years ago. And then I went back and had another look. And I learned a few little extra bits based on Karen's question. So I do love getting questions. But just to help you guys out, I like to discuss things through rather than simply Q&A, which kind of, it's kind of ironic in terms of my biomechanics Q&A, which is why I wanted to set this first one up at this kind of like in this tone. So happy for you to email me questions to Rachel at biomechanicseducation.com. Yes, it does, Karen. Happy for you to post them here or any on any of the social media channels. I'm going to be doing this again, hopefully, depends on the response, next Wednesday. I know there are a lot of people that haven't made it. And also, just before I do close off, if you haven't already checked out SIMSPA, go onto the internet, type in SIMSPA, C-I-M-S-P-A. SIMSPA are, as I've said, working super hard in the background, if you're not involved with them already, to help you. So what they need to know is, what do you need and what do you want? So Danny Ross from SIMSPA, I know he's in still now, and I are working very closely together, trying to work out what can we get you that is free and accessible, like this Q&A, to understand, from my area of expertise, which is movement and biomechanics and strength training and exercise, but also other providers. So mental health, I know Platinum Training Institute over in Belfast, who are in Lee Haven, and his guys, they're developing a load of resources for to support people with mental health issues. I think we're concerned, as this goes on for longer, with the idea that that could become a big factor. So what do you want? What do you need? Are there some resources, Lee, by the way, that you can send through that I can pass on? Or I'm sure I know you're already working with SIMSPA. So what we want to know is, what do you need? What do you want? And just let me have a quick look. I know that on Ben's Q&A, there was a few little pointers. So SIMSPA, they've been doing a workforce impact survey, which a lot of people responded to. And there were a few challenges that came up. Technical stuff, I think it's possible to learn. And a lot of the providers like Zoom, and the others do have really good video tutorials. So definitely go and check those out. If you haven't used Zoom before today, you can see, I mean, I'm in my 50s. I didn't grow up with technology. So, and I worked out, it's quite simple. You click the link, you download, and then you're in. And you can see how clear this video tool is. So if you're not online yet, you can do it without anybody in. You can literally just go on, start a meeting and talk to yourself like this without anybody watching. But you can send the link to invite. I do it with my family every Saturday. And you can certainly put your business online if you haven't already. I know a lot of people are feeling concerned how to do that. But predominantly, you still need to do a PARQ. You still need to do an assessment. You still need to clear off the red flags. You still need to think about safety in terms of the types of things you're teaching people on a video call. I know there's a lot of free stuff. And try not to just think, well, so-and-so's doing it. Think about you, your people, and your duty of care to them. And they would appreciate anything, by the way, that you do in these tough times. So what we can do is build these fabulous resources that we've now got. I have now got a whole plethora of online CPDs that I've been meaning to do for so long to complement the face-to-face education, which I still feel very strongly about, which I will be going back to as soon as I'm allowed. But at the moment, if you go on the website, I've got a whole battery of online education you can jump into, and you can just upgrade when we go face to face. So if you have the funds, if you have the opportunity, they are cheaper and they're easier to access in terms of, you can do it whenever you want. I'm doing some live like this week, next week, all through this month, and I will be recording them. And so potentially those, if the recordings go well, they can be accessible to you as well. So I think that is pretty much it. I'm just going to check in, see if anybody has any final questions. So Lee's just put a link in there. There's a link to the mental health research project that they did with the Mental Health Foundation. So that's just down there in the chat box if you want to go and click on that and grab that. Or does it stay up when I log off? I think it might do at your end until you log out. So you can grab that link. I know that Lee's very passionate about supporting people from that aspect of mental health. So go and check out the Platinum Training Institute for their website. They're over in Belfast, but I know they do a lot of stuff online as well. So go and check that out. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring this to a close. I'm going to say thank you so much for coming along. Thanks to those who did ask questions. Daniel, if you want to ask me stuff again afterwards, off the back of this, let's have another chat. Lee's put some more stuff in there. Oh, a level 2 award in mental health awareness. Thank you, Lee. So you can go and check that out. And then individually, if you want to ask me anything, let me know. And if you are happy for me to go and ask, sort of do it publicly, maybe next week, Wednesday at 12 o'clock, where I'll be doing pretty much the same again. What I'm planning on doing is making it a more interactive session next time. I just wanted to use this one and then gain some feedback. So please do email me, rachel@biomechanicseducation.com. Hi, Jane. Let me know how this went, if it's left you with more questions, which I hope it did. let me know. But did it help? Did it give you a way of thinking maybe about some of your questions slightly differently, so that I can help you get to the answers? So I will. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Danny. So Danny might be joining me, by the way, in doing some Q&A stuff. So it's biomechanics education, SIMSPA combined, to understand a little bit about what we can do to help you. We are really, really keen and passionate to help you. So let us know what you need, guys. Just to finish, most importantly, please reach out. We're here to help. Let us know, and we'll get through this, because together we got this, right? Hashtag together we got this. Her Spirit app, girls, Her Spirit, the app is free till the end of June, June 30th. It's completely free. Live exercises, guys. Sorry, you're going to have to pass it on to the missus or any females. It's free, funded by Sport England. So if you want to have a look at how others are doing it, if you're not doing it already, or if you want to get some ideas, trip on over to the Her Spirit app. Maybe I'll see you over there. Listen, guys, have a great week. See you next week, maybe. Let me know what your questions are next time. Take care. Thank you.